Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So it's 9 p.m. in London after day 12 of the French Open. I'm here, Matt's here, David's here. We're all in the same city. We're separated by increasingly small distances, but separated still. That will change next week, folks. But we'll talk about next week when it happens, because now I feel like I need to check with you both that we're all in a fit state to record this podcast, because I can confidently say that an hour ago I wasn't in a fit state to do podcasting after 3 hours and 18 minutes plus the emotional aftermath of Krejcikova against Sakkari. I've done some regrouping. I've watched some animal videos on the internet. I'm feeling just about emotionally stable enough to record this podcast. How about you, David?
Well, I'm all right, Catherine, because I'm kind of used to it with Barbora Krejcikova now. She and I have got history in terms of her talking and me getting upset. But this was another level, I have to say. It was an incredibly emotional last hour of the match on both sides of the net. I found myself really moved by both of those players today for different reasons. And that was one of the best sets I've seen in a long, long time. It just had everything, and I won't forget it. I won't forget it at all. I think those two players probably won themselves a hell of a lot of fans. People that probably didn't even know they were when they started watching. It's one of those sets of tennis.
Yeah, the exchange between Sue Barker and Andy Murray after the 2013 Wimbledon final came to mind. When Sue Barker said to him, "Do you realise what you've put us all through, that final game?" And he said, "Well, imagine playing it." And that's kind of how I felt. I was extremely stressed in those last stages of that match, because everything was on the line for both players. And you could feel it and see it, how much it meant. And then I just thought, well, I'm sat here on the sofa. I'm fine. But these two are the ones going through it. And Goodness, it was stressful. But as you said, that set, that match really will live long in the memory. I think that was a real classic.
Yeah, I think it was one of the most epic Grand Slam semi-finals that I've seen in terms of drama, not in terms of quality. It really went in and out in terms of quality. The good thing about the quality was that it was there when you most wanted it, in the most epic and dramatic moments. Somebody raised their game generally, rather than somebody lowering their game to lose the point. The big points were generally won rather than lost. But in terms of drama and everything that Grand Slam semi-final, quarter, you could say quarter-final matches are about, which is stakes, It was as good as I can remember off the top of my head. If that were Serena and Venus Williams, or Naomi Osaka and Venus Williams, or give me some other rivals, you know, Chris Evert and Martina Navratilova, it would be on all the back pages. It would be being described as one for the ages, I think. When the match point that incident happened with the ball being out but not being out and uproar over Hawkeye but not Hawkeye, I felt like, okay, this match officially has everything now. It's stick a fork in it. It's done.
Because it's quite interesting because the first set, our WhatsApp group was very quiet for quite a while. Now, I think there were a couple of reasons for that. One of them was I was enjoying the match. I was kind of half watching it because I was working at the time, but I think I was enjoying it because I loved the contrast in styles between the two, and that remained throughout the 3 hours and 20 minutes that it was going on. The sort of the violent hitting of Sakari, all fidgets and energy, and the languid timing of the ball and point construction, the imaginative point construction of Krejcikova, I think it's a lovely combination. And actually, when I said that, you said, yeah, but the quality's not very good. And I thought,
I was a bit distracted at the time.
All right, we'll get on to that. I said, I was a bit...
No, but I do stand by that.
I was thinking, is that fair? And then I went and looked at the stats, and actually there were way more unforced errors than there were winners in the columns. And that happened throughout the first two sets.
They were taking it in turns to lose their backhands, weren't they?
Mm. Mm. And actually, Krejcikova's backhand, I think of as, you know, when she needs it, it's there. And I think that is still true because it was very helpful for her in the final stages. But the fact it was helpful for her in the final stages was remarkable because it had broken down throughout the match. Sakari was targeting it, had elicited a lot of unforced errors from it. And yet when she needed it, she still managed to find it. But going back to that first set, Sakari started brilliantly, picked up right where she left off against Świątek. And I had some concerns that picking up just 24 hours later after that big emotional high of beating Świątek would be difficult. But she managed it. But what she never got was the double break. She had many chances in that first set to get it, but couldn't get it. And as you said, David, this fascinating contrast, not only in styles, but in demeanors. Sakari is so energetic outwardly and so pumped for everything.
Nadal-like almost in the way she carries herself. I mean, I love watching her when she's like that.
I absolutely can't get enough of it. And yet I also love Krejcikova's much calmer sort of step-by-step approach to the match. And those two sort of in tandem with one another did make for a fascinating contest.
Mm. Yeah. You're going to have to take over a bit, David, because set two is where it gets a bit patchy for me and Matt.
Right, well, explain to me why you then went very quiet for the next hour and I was getting... And I had one message saying, I hope you're watching this, David. And I'm like, why? Explain what happened with you two.
Well, Bruce Springsteen has announced the revival of his much-acclaimed Springsteen on Broadway show this summer, which will coincide with the US Open, which we very likely won't be attending. But it's good to have plans, isn't it? So we decided to embark on what we thought was the futile task of attempting to get tickets. We had enlisted a team of helpers. Matt and Sarah, who are a friend of and part of the podcast team, had five devices on the go between them. I had two. My mum had one. She was very confused by all the instructions I sent her, but she diligently followed them. And so between the hours of 5 p.m. and I can tell you it was exactly 5:42 p.m., we were all watching a blue bar inch agonizingly slowly across our screens. And just like with the predictions today, I won the race. And the privilege, yes, of spending many hundreds of dollars on two tickets to a concert that we'll almost certainly not be able to attend, but we're very excited about it.
In a country we're not allowed to go to.
Our attitude, David, is you've got to be in it to win it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you missed 42 wonderful minutes of tennis. And yes, I can tell you about them. I mean, I had to make notes. I had to actually make notes in this match. So much was happening. And that really is not my style at all. But, I mean, it was just event after event. And, I mean, I thought Sakkari was going to take over when she leveled up at once at all. I thought she's onto something here. And she did take over. And she went 5-3 up, didn't she, in that third set. And she had match point. But I've written here, I'll tell you what I wrote. I've written utterly insane point construction from Krejcikova to break back. Her imagination and ability to execute what she has in mind is mind-blowing. Moonballs that nearly lobbed Sakkari off the bounce. Did you see that?
I loved the moonballing. I mean, loved it.
It's so rare these days that you find a player who will play moonballs in an attacking way like that. Designed to disrupt. Not because she's losing the timing or anything like that, because she thinks it's a proper tactic. And it took me back to a match I once saw in 1998. I was in Umag, Croatia, and the favoured player in the match I was watching was Karol Kachera, and he was facing Magnus Norman.
That's and Norman, the most 90s matchup there's ever been.
It is.
Yeah.
Magnus Norman going toe-to-toe with Kachera, could not stay with him. He just couldn't get near him. And mid-match, he just changed his tactics completely, and all he did was hit moonballs. That's it for the rest of the match. And Kachera started to miss and continued to miss until he lost.
Well, I can tell you that this is a second-hand story, but Daniela Hantikova was telling me during Madrid, we were watching a Petra Kvitova match, and of course Kvitova has had great success in Madrid in the past. I think she's a three-time champion, isn't she? And I was saying, didn't you play Kvitova in Madrid? She said, yeah, I beat her in Madrid. Unbelievably, she said she lost the first set 6-1. And she was just getting absolutely crunched. And her coach came on court. She said, oh, I'll go for on-court coaching because, you know, got nothing else to try. And she just sort of moaned at him and said, well, I've just got no chance. She's just so much better than me. And he said, go for the old moonballing. And it went very well for her, I believe.
Mm. Well, I mean, these moonballs, like I say, one of them bounced and nearly went out of reach of Sakkari because it bounced over her head. And she just about got it back. And then suddenly you've got this ridiculous angle that Krejcikova's hit as a backup. And you could see how she was setting her up. There were like 1-2 combinations. Such a clever match player.
Mm. And there were times deep in that third set where I really thought Krejcikova was flagging physically. She looked tired to me, and there were a couple of forehands she hit one after the other, which sort of barely made the net in one game. And I was reminded that she's playing doubles here as well. She's played a lot of tennis these 2 weeks. And I just thought, how is she going to win this match physically against Sakkari, who is going so strong seemingly down the other end? And yet she's deceptive in that way, because it's like she saves her energy for the, you know, for when she really needs it. And she's got a lot more in reserve than I think it appears. And down that final stretch, she found her best level again. I mean, the swinging backhand volley to save Sakkari's match point was one of the gutsiest shots I can remember. And then to keep creating match points after Sakkari did what she did against Pegula back in Miami on a few of those match points, just going for it and hitting the lines. And
she's
one
of the most exciting players in the world when she's match point down. One of the most dangerous players on the planet from match point down.
Totally. And for Krejcikova to absorb all that and not get completely flustered by it and think, well, how do I finish this off? It's just a mental feat. I saw that Lindsay Davenport apparently called her one of the mentally toughest players she's ever seen.
Mm. Yeah, she's deceptive in lots of ways, actually. Mm. I think just on the moonballing, by the way, I've just been in Maria Sakkari's press conference and she kept on mentioning how difficult she found it to generate that pace consistently. She kept mentioning, she was asked by Courtney Nguyen of the WTA Insider, what is so difficult about Barbora Krejcikova's game? And she said, she kept making me generate my own pace. And, you know, you can do it once or twice, but as a consistent tactic, it's exhausting. And I think it frazzled her brain a little bit, actually, having to do that. And you're right, David, you occasionally see, or more than occasionally on clay, see players throw in a novelty moon ball or two, don't you? You know, bit of fun, maybe a bit of a troll, whatever, or a defensive moon ball here and there. But a consistent, concerted tactic of aggression, you don't see that, or you certainly don't see that anymore. And it was, yeah, it was a joy. It was really fascinating today.
Yeah, no, it was. And yet you kept getting the drama of the match points. And then what was it that actually happened on that overruled moment? Because that was... Krejcikova had her arms in the air, didn't she? She thought she'd won. And that's what gets me, is the fact that she thought she'd won. She thought the forehand was out. And then the umpire comes down, says it's caught the line. I think Hawkeye said it was out, but they only used that on the TV replay, which... I don't really think they should have that available for TV.
Totally.
For TV viewers.
Totally agree. There are far too many people in uproar at the moment about and saying definitively, I think Krejcikova's been told in press afterwards, well, it was out. You were right. You did win the match twice. And that is simply not the case. It might have been out. The umpire might have read it wrong or got the wrong mark. It's possible. But to say that definitively is just not a place we're in with Hawkeye on clay at the moment. We're not in it anywhere with Hawkeye. Hawkeye has a margin of error. It is not a simple cover-all solution for clay. It was a very goal celebration with VAR situation, wasn't it?
And we have been told, though, by people who work in TV, that they believe it works and that it is the same accuracy as it is on a hard court. There may be the margin for error thing, but that it's the same.
Yeah, but the margin for error is a problem when you've got the visual evidence in front of you. So you're gonna go off a computer that has a margin for error when you can see with your very own eyes that it's not right.
Sometimes they choose the wrong mark, and sometimes the mark is something players argue over as well.
Mm.
So I just feel that you either use it and you show it on TV, or you don't use it and you don't show it on TV,
yeah,
because it's not fair.
I think it's basically irresponsible to show it on TV if it's not being used in the match.
Mm.
And I believe, given that it's not used in the tournament, you don't have all the proper cameras in place. And I don't think it's the same Hawkeye that would be used if it was in place in the tournament. So I think it's even less accurate than it is
normally. And Sakkari was asked about it in press afterwards. She said, it was put to her, are you in favour of Hawkeye on clay? And she said, if it's accurate, then yeah, great. If it's all tested and it's perfectly accurate, of course, who wouldn't want that? But she said, my understanding at the moment is that it's not accurate.
And I think that is one of the problems is there isn't a definitive on that. We're all just saying we've kind of heard that it's not accurate, and then other people are saying that are inside the system more, actually it is accurate, it's just not getting passed. Nobody knows definitively. It hasn't been adjudicated on, other than the fact that it's not being used. And that's very frustrating. I wish they would just sort out a standard for this and decide, it's never going to be used on clay. Because at the moment we've got this combination as well, because some tournaments have used the other one. the replay one where you see it visually. Yeah, the Fox 10
Madrid
one.
Used that, didn't they? I didn't mind it, but I seemed to be alone in that. Everybody else seemed
to hate it. Surely it's a problem not to have a standard. That doesn't feel right to me. They've got to have it, or they've not got to have it.
Yeah, anyway,
I mean,
absolutely.
It was dramatic, and I feel like both players deserve enormous credit the way they came off that and still duked it out for another few minutes. And I mean, I feel so sorry for Sakkari. She couldn't have done any more. She did not choke. She went for it, and yet I feel really uplifted and overwhelmed by what Krejcikova did.
Catherine, I know you went to Sakkari's press conference. What was her demeanour like in that?
Well, she would probably disagree a little bit with what you said there, David. I mean, I would have said the same to her, that you didn't do anything wrong. There was just a force at work with Barbora Krejcikova that not even you could stop today. But she said she allowed herself to think about the fact that she was a point away.
Oh, wow.
And that was her mistake. She said it was just inexperience and naivety. And I got the impression she was obviously in a lot of pain about it. She spoke brilliantly, but, you know, she was hurting. There were, as is quite often the case when someone comes in off a defeat like that to a press conference, journalists really, you know, they obviously want to ask them about the loss, and they want to hear that it hurts, because that's interesting. But they're also trying to throw a bone and be really sensitive to the situation often. So you'll quite often get some really peppily framed messages, questions about, but it's been such a great tournament, and aren't you proud? And, you know, aren't there so many positives that you can focus on? And sometimes players really take that bait and they go, yeah, you're right, thanks. Thanks for fluffing my feathers. I really have had a great tournament. Today was rubbish, but you're right, I am overall great. Maria Sakkari was not in the mood for reveling in the brilliance of her tournament so far. She went, yeah, there is lots to be proud of, but I don't really care about any of that right now. It all really, really hurts. And she spoke like she knew this was something she had to experience so that she doesn't experience it next time, like a necessary Rubicon to cross, a hurdle to overcome.
Slight worry is that this was a great opportunity.
She knows that. She definitely knows that. I think she will dissect in detail. And her coach Tom Hill is notoriously forensic, isn't he? He said, I saw an interview with him before the match where he said he had been waking up in the middle of the night having epiphanies about return positions for the Sofia Kenin serve ahead of Sakkari's match against Kenin. I hope, you know, obviously they need to do some analysis, but equally, can you point to a shot or a moment or a point where she should have done anything differently? I'm not sure that I can.
No.
It just felt like there were forces at work. There are forces at work with Barbora Krejcikova, and she might tell us.
She is special.
She might tell us that it's that. I hope this isn't too overwrought, but she would probably tell us that it's Jana Novotna, wouldn't she? You know, she says she's with me, and
she's inspired.
She played
that. No question about it.
That wonderful tribute to her. Very understated, but she kind of almost took the mic at the end of her interview with Marion Bartley. A really nice interview. Bartley's really good at those on-court interviews, and they are not easy, particularly with all the translation involved. Particularly if you're translating to nobody, which has quite often been the case. Luckily, it wasn't today. First thing she did was just say, can we have one more ovation, please, for these two players? Which was just the perfect way to start off that interview, just a recognition that this just wasn't any hard-fought semi-final. This was something extremely special, I think, that will be remembered for a long time. And then there was, you know, generally really nice interview where Krejcikova gave some lovely quotes. She said, "I've always wanted to play a match just like this," which was a lovely line. And then at the end, Marion Bartoli pointed out that she's going for the singles doubles double, which has only been done once before by Mary Pierce. Or no, it was last done by Mary Pierce, who, of course, French woman representing France. There was a lovely little twinkle in Krejcikova's eyes. She definitely wants to do that double. But then she kind of took the mic and took the opportunity to pay tribute to everybody in her team, Krejcikova. And then finally, she looked to the heavens and said, "And Diana Novotná," and she said, "I wouldn't be here without her." And her lip trembled as she said it, and we all descended into floods of tears, because it was quite a moment, wasn't it? Look, we know that story. We've tried to tell it on the podcast. David, you've told it many times on the podcast, but just those few words from Krejcikova just floored me.
Mm. Yeah, well, she just reminds me so much of her. Her body language is so similar, and her manner and her play.
Even her socks. She's got those 90s socks. She does.
She's such a cool player. I love watching her. It's again another amazing addition to the tour, because there's nobody else like her. Total one-off in the group that we have in tennis right now.
It's only her fifth main draw of a Grand Slam that she's playing this week in singles. You know, she's a new injection, as you say, into an already brilliant tour, brimming with talent, and yet she's also got some experience because she's won big tournaments in doubles. And I think the role she's played in that doubles team with Siniaková is the one with the cool head and, you know, ice in the veins. And I think we're seeing that now in her singles game. And yeah, I mean, I'm completely won over by her as a person, a player, a story. I just think she's brilliant.
And for me, potential recency bias here, because we've we're still sort of vibrating with those 3 hours and 20 minutes of tennis, aren't we? But for me, she goes into the final as favourite, and that's not to discount what Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova is doing. She's her own brilliant story, playing some wonderful tennis. She won in two sets today over Tamara Zidanchek, and those were wonderful scenes, and it was a glorious performance, almost nerveless, actually, which was absolutely not what I was expecting from Pavlyuchenkova, given how long she's waited for this moment and opportunity. I thought the desperation to grasp it, I thought she might want it too much, because we have seen that before. So I thought she dealt with the moment brilliantly, but I'm such a sucker for just seeming like I always say this. I don't believe in fate and all of that, but I am still such a sucker for these stories where it feels like fate is at play, where you could almost be made to believe, or I could almost.
Well, she's made her own. It's such a triumph what she's done this fortnight, given her history. I mean, but I also like the way, I mean, I thought she gives really interesting interviews. They're totally different to Krejcikova. They're not sort of heart on the sleeve and just let you all in because this is how I'm feeling. With her, it's kind of self-deprecating. She's a very interesting analyst of her own game as well. She's very honest in her own way. She was explaining, you know, I think she did an interview on Eurosport and Mats Wilander said, you know, you look so relaxed out there. And she just said, oh, poker face. It's not real. You know, it's just a poker face. And she's sarcastic about her own performance and her own manner and all that sort of thing. But cool. She's a cool woman, cool player. And I agree with you, though. I'd put Krejcikova favourite, personally.
They've never played before.
Have they not?
All these first-time meetings at the latter stages of this event, just extraordinary.
She was asked, Pavlyuchenkova, what her 14-year-old self would tell her that she's made a Grand Slam final at 29. And she said, well, my 14-year-old self probably would have said, what took you so long?
Well, she was junior world champion at 15, wasn't she?
She was
just lapping up everything at junior level.
She was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
She won so many matches as a junior. And look, even before this run, she had a very, very good career. You know, 7 Grand Slam quarterfinals, 12 titles, numerous big wins and moments against top 10 players. But for her to decide that isn't enough and to improve as a tennis player and as a competitor, I think she's dealing with these matches wonderfully, because today against Zidanec was a perfect example. Zidanec was the player I was drawn to most in the match because she was the one with the more spectacular highs. She was hitting some unbelievable forehands, some really nice defensive work on the run, and it felt for a long time like she was the better player, certainly in the first set. And yet the way Pavlyuchenkova just managed it, just as a match, was, I think, a real improvement. I've never thought of Pavlyuchenkova as that sort of player, but it's something she's been doing brilliantly all tournament.
Yeah, it was like she had watched the Coco Gauff match yesterday, where Goff's forehand was targeted, because Pavlyuchenkova was targeting the Zidanec forehand, which is absolutely the strong, most venomous wing of Zidanec's. And it was this brilliant, brilliant tactic from somebody that we haven't previously necessarily thought of as a tactical player. It was great. Mats Wilander was just brimming with joy and praise during both the interviews with the finalists today. He stopped Krejcikova at the end before she virtually left the building, or hologram Krejcikova left the building. And he said, I just want to say you're the most wonderful player to watch. And in a slightly different way, he'd said something similarly sort of heartfelt and lovely to Pavlyuchenkova earlier on. And it was just, I love seeing these legends get so into it. And, you know, he probably didn't know that much about Krejcikova before this fortnight, but a lot of the pundits didn't. They'd have thought doubles player. But, you know, that's okay. So long as they know a damn lot about her now, that's okay.
I think we all felt like that a few months back before she started to show what she's got. But yeah, you're right. Better late than never. And I think people have been absolutely won over, everybody, by it. Mm.
Yeah, I agree. So that'll be the women's final on Saturday. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova against Barbora Krejcikova. I ask just one thing of this final, and that is that Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova resurrect the leopard print outfit she wore for her Madrid semi-final a few weeks ago, which was inexplicably a flash in the pan because it was the best outfit there's ever been. And she only wore it once, and maybe it's because she lost, but, you know, it is one of the great mysteries of tennis. And had there not been a lot of very, very important questions that people needed to ask Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova after her win today, I would have posed that hard-hitting number at her. And she probably would have loved it. Hey, if she wins, I'll ask, do you regret not winning it in the leopard print?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So that is on Saturday. We've got a few minutes left to look ahead to tomorrow. And edition number 58 of Rafael Nadal against Novak Djokovic. And of course, Stefanos Tsitsipas against Alexander Zverev as well. And I wanted to take a few minutes to look ahead to it because to look ahead in particular to Nadal against Djokovic, because Hannah, who's running our Twitter this week and at the Grand Slams this year, casually pointed out to us yesterday on our group chat that Rafael Nadal is two matches away from becoming the clubhouse greatest male tennis player in numbers. And we haven't talked about that. I haven't heard anybody else talking about that. And it needs mentioning. So we're addressing it now, because that is extraordinary. And you compare that to the questions that Serena Williams gets about Margaret Court's record, which is, as we've made the case many times, a far less valid record. Well, it's valid, it's just a more nuanced record than Roger Federer's when you drill down into it. And look, I know Serena Williams endorses the narrative. She wants 24. She's not shying away from it, etc., etc. But anyway, we should be talking about the fact that Rafael Nadal is two matches away from getting to 21. Why haven't we talked about it? Why is nobody talking about it?
Yeah, well, I must admit it hadn't really occurred to me, which is ridiculous. I know. I think we talked about it during Australia. There was a moment where that suddenly became a possibility before he lost. But yeah, it's... I still think the fact that he could draw level on the number of Grand Slam titles that Pete Sampras won in his entire career with just his French Open haul of 14 is ridiculous on an epic scale. But yeah, him going ahead of Federer finally after a 16-year career would be some moment. I mean, obviously that doesn't mean that they will end up like that, or that Djokovic won't come back and end up over, you know. But it's a big old deal. And it's also, this match, there is so much on this match. It is 29-28, the head-to-head in favour of Novak Djokovic. One match between them. And Djokovic, what, could he get to 19 if he wins this tournament? Is that right? He's on 18 right now. Mm-hmm. So he could go to 19. He'd be one behind Federer and Nadal with Wimbledon to come. I mean, I know he's got to win two matches, but gee, there's so much on this. It's just amazing.
And Novak Djokovic is also going for his second lap round all the slams. You know, none of them, Federer, Nadal and Djokovic, have won every slam twice. Nadal is missing the Australian Open. Djokovic and Federer are missing the French Open. I think that would be a very big deal for Djokovic as well, something that Nadal and Federer have not done.
He's also going for the calendar slam.
He sure is. Yeah, absolutely. Just on why we've not been talking about it, I've really wrestled with that. And I think part of it is that Nadal doesn't want to talk about it. And I think any questions to Nadal are not going to yield any answers you know, he is not going to engage with that subject. And I think people have tried and he has distanced himself from it. I think that's part of it. It's more Nadal's character. And I think people sort of talk about the record to reflect that character, perhaps. I think the fact it's not a historic record is a little bit of a difference. You know, it's potentially still a moving goalpost. You know, it would be incredibly significant if he gets to 21 and overtakes Federer. Of course it would. But it's not like that's the finish line, because we don't know how long is left in this race. And I think another factor, and this is totally unfair, but people think Nadal winning Roland Garros is inevitable and bound to happen. And therefore, it doesn't quite have the sort of build-up that I think other slams have. You know, for a long time, Nadal at Roland Garros, people have penciled that one in, you know, at the start of the year. So I just think all of those things coming together mean that it hasn't been talked about so much, but absolutely it should be being talked about and it should be ramped up right now, because this is happening potentially.
Mm. We will, assuming he wins tomorrow, which is absolutely so far from a given, but we will continue to ramp. That is our pledge to you.
Does anybody here think Djokovic will win?
No, but that doesn't... The fact that I think we're all going to unanimously predict a Nadal win will be... This is my issue with pole vaults. I think if you pole vaulted this, it would probably be 80% Nadal. But that doesn't mean he is whatever the equivalent of that in odds are. I'd say probably most of those 80% would put it as 51-49, if that makes sense.
Did you say... If I pole vaulted this, I pole vaulted this 5 minutes after Novak Djokovic set up the semi final.
Mm. And we're not going to talk about the results because they're irrelevant. But yeah, I suspect.
1600 votes, folks.
Are we all going to say we think Nadal will win just?
Not necessarily. I think the fact that he thumped him in that final in October, when I thought that would be close, in fact, I thought Djokovic would win, that's changed my view of possibilities. I kind of assume that Novak Djokovic will make matches at least close against Nadal, but that stopped me in my tracks. So I genuinely think there could be any result here, any scoreline here. I think, well, you can roll your eyes, but I mean, that's what I think. I think it's very easy to...
Could. Does not a prediction make, David? That's where I'm rolling my eyes. Of course, any result could happen.
I will make my prediction.
I'm asking what you think will happen.
Well, I think Nadal will win in about four sets. But I think it's perfectly valid to point out the type of rivalry they've had and the fact that Djokovic has also thumped Nadal, albeit on hard courts, in the past.
Absolutely. So, we're making the same point, David. We're all going to pick Nadal, but none of us feel confident about it.
I'm not necessarily saying it will be close. It might not be close.
Of course it might not be close.
I could see a scenario in which it's not.
It might be any number of things. So. I don't
want to further complicate matters, but I feel quite confident that Nadal will win. That's not to say that it won't be a close match.
Mm.
I'm just quite confident about the result.
Mm. Interesting.
But I do think it will be much closer than the October final. Djokovic will not allow himself to play that badly again.
No, I agree. What might happen in Zverev against Tsitsipas?
I'm going with Stefanos Tsitsipas to win that. I think he's had the better of their rivalry generally, and I think he's ready. I think this is his time to reach a first Grand Slam final. He has looked brilliant to me all tournament. He's had some threats. You know, I know he was the big favourite in that bottom half, but he's had Isner, he's had Medvedev showing up on clay, and he's handled them impeccably. I think he's ready. I think he'll have too much game for Zverev.
It's like he's been on he's been on Total Wipeout or something with people like throw. He's been on this like travelator type thing with people throwing things at him, and he's just about navigated them all. It's been I agree. I think he's ready.
He's been very impressive because some of those obstacles have been significant, and also added to the fact that it's just been, in kind of Nadal terms, assumed that he will get to the final, including by me. And actually, his route ended up being a lot more rocky than I was expecting. And I also didn't expect, for instance, Zverev to be in this sort of form. He's looked very good. I still think Zverev has just not faced anything like what he's going to face in the semi-final. That's the difference. It's kind of like how Medvedev was looking good against a certain kind of player. I think Tsitsipas takes him out as well. You know, I think there could be a really close set at the start, maybe even two sets, but then I think Tsitsipas just accelerates away. I'm very impressed with like his mental approach to these matches, and he's still in there. Even if things go against him for a bit, he doesn't disintegrate, or at least he's not been doing in recent months.
That is the first of the two semi-finals, so that's a 1:50 start UK time, which means I think that TV want first ball hit at 2 p.m.
It'd be late, couldn't it? Could end up being
really
late.
And then Djokovic Nadal is a 4:30 UK start. On Simon Mathieu tomorrow. It's the women's doubles semi-finals, and it's Magda Linette and Bernarda Pera against Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova. And that is followed by Bethany Mattek-Sands and Iga Świątek against Arina Kamelia-Begu and Nadia Podoroska, the semi-finalist in the singles from last year. So that's pretty extraordinary. There's also boys... singles semi-finals tomorrow, and the reason I mention those is because all four of the semi-finalists are French, and that's the first time that that's happened in the juniors, so that's pretty extraordinary. Today we had the mixed doubles final, and Joe Salisbury could not have looked more surprised to be the mixed doubles champion of Roland Garros alongside Desiree Kravchuk. They beat Elena Vesnina and Aslan Karatsev in a champions tiebreak, a match tiebreak today, 10-5 in that tiebreak. I think winning that title is an unexpected joy for those two.
Why was he so surprised, do you think?
Because he didn't expect to win, I think.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
First British win at Roland Garros for 39 years.
Well, there's a good reason to be surprised then.
Yes.
Karatsev in the final. Yeah.
It really is.
With Vesnina. Imagine if someone had told you that at the start of the year. French Open mixed doubles final will include Elena Vesnina and this guy, Aslan Karatsev. What?
Yeah, I mean, Vesnina hasn't played tennis for about 18 months, has she? Because she's had two kids in that period.
Ridiculous. And now, we also had the men's doubles semi-finals today. Ooh. On Court Simon Mathieu. We know who the doubles finalists are in the men's, and it'll be Alexander Bublik and Andrei Golubev. Also a surprise, that one.
Great, great quote from Bublik, who said that he's basically reached the doubles final as an accident. He said, normally I'd love to get on the grass and start in Stuttgart, but I'm still here playing doubles.
That's brilliant. They beat Pablo Andujar and Pedro Martinez in three sets today. And Pierre Hugues-Hébert and Nicolas Mahut, the wonderful, lovely fairy tale romance continues. I know they've won this title before, but, you know, there was before and then there's after with Hébert Mahut. They beat the second seeds Cabal and Farah today 6-4 in the third. The first two sets were tiebreak sets, and Pierre Hugues-Hébert trying to serve out that match at 5-4 in the third
was an experience.
It was an experience for everyone involved.
three
double faults in that game.
Really?
He used I believe in English, it was a transcript I read, but I think they only transcribed the English portion of the press conferences. He used the phrase pain in the arse to describe trying to serve it out.
Why was everybody so into that at the end? Because people, I noticed on Twitter, I didn't get a chance
the
to
crowd.
See it. People were really into it.
Crowd.
The crowd.
I think 5,000 are allowed in every stadium at the moment, and that means that Simone Mathieu was basically full.
It was rocking.
It was packed.
And Bermeau take you with them, don't
they?
They make you feel...
Three match points.
They take us with them, and we're English, so I can only imagine what they do to the French. Yeah, it felt like a Davis Cup match. It was really special. So could be a really special final, actually, with accidental Alexander Bublik.
there's a nickname that's happening.
And the French pair. So, yeah, that's what's coming up over the coming days at the French Open. Goodness me, what a day it's been today. Three more of them to come. We've got our mascots. Zeus, we've had a good one.
55 points, wasn't it?
55 glorious points. There's not just one winner in that match, Barbora. There's three of us. There's me and Zeus to consider as well.
Well, Rogue, you and me got sweet diddly squat.
Yeah.
So buck your ideas up. But thanks for your support.
Yes, Scouser Mouse and I got the correct winner, but got the wrong number of sets. And in this game, that is 0 points.
Mm.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King. She's had a lovely day on my mum and dad's hammock. So she's living her best life. We have our lovely mascot, Phoebe. Lovely corgi. We love Phoebe. We have Chris Albert Lee, who's our executive producer. And Matt, our shout-outs today are for...
They're for Joanna Mallon.
Right, Joanna.
Oh, hello. Is that relative of Andy Mallon? Who is somebody that gets in touch with us sometimes?
Yes, also a listener.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
This is she's living with me moment. is Andy Mallon living with you, Joanna? Let us know.
Thank you both.
Thank
for
you
your
both.
Wonderful support.
Next up we have, and I think I might just do these two together. We've got David, backer 943, and we've got Matt, backer 949.
Right, Matt.
And I promise it's not us.
Have they got surnames or not?
No, just tattoos.
Brilliant. Well, thank you both. You're both ledges.
Yes. Thank you, David. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, this David. Thank you, this Matt, for your company. Thank you, everyone involved in the podcast. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure. We've got three more to come. Goodness me, this French Open's been a thrill ride, hasn't it? I can only imagine what tomorrow has in store. Let's go and get some sleep. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.